Big D Entertainment, in association with Dipsy Doodle Productions, presents the Dave Holly Hour, brought to you by the Sky Lounge and Tea, XL Chiropractic, Quality Nails, Ale Hop Brewery Tours, and Jesse Moffat Entertainment. The Dave Holly Hour features Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment Conversations and has been recognized by the Sioux Falls Stage Awards with a special distinction for promoting the arts. A true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Welcome, everybody. It's episode number 98. Two more to go till we hit triple digits, hit that century mark. And, of course, a few days after that, the 10th of October, will actually be the second anniversary of episode number one of the Dave Holly Hour podcast. I'm Dave Holly, if you hadn't guessed it by now. Otherwise, that intro that Jack did so marvelously well wouldn't have made much sense. But you never know. Will there be a guest host in the future? We call that a tease, don't we? Well, the one thing we always tease you with is who's coming up on today's program. Episode number 98 features Ricardo Terabelsi from Our Wine Bar. We'll talk about his enjoyment of Our Wine Bar and what he has brought to the entertainment scene in the Sioux Empire via a lot of live music. Then after that, local author Kale Lawrence will talk about her new book that's out, The Magi Menagerie. That is all coming up. But for those of you that know the regular routine, you know that we talk to the creatives, we talk to the actors, the authors, we talk to the executive directors, the artistic directors, the musicians, the singer-songwriters, the magicians, the poets, everybody that's involved in arts we like to talk to. Well, there's going to be an arts think tank coming up at Van Arts Studio on Phillips Avenue. That'll be Saturday night starting at 6 o'clock. Bring your own beverage, bring a chair to sit along, and just think of some stuff. They're going to keep it to an hour, but I wanted to make sure that we passed that along. I'll remind you at the end of the program as well. And then, what else do we do? Well, I'm going to get my Jasper Newton ready.
Time to grab your favorite beverage, lift it high, and toast it to being Thursday, a.k.a. Weekend Eve.
Hey, the weekend isn't around the corner, it's here!
So long, hump day and your frumpy way. We say hello to Thursdays with opening nights. The weekend is near and we can see the bright lights. Yes, Thursday, you're so hearty, we can't wait for Friday, so a day early, we start the party.
All right, here's something we need to toast that we don't toast often enough. Just good people that do favors and do nice things for you. I especially want to, I can't single out, but I'm going to duo out two individuals, Michael Sorensen from the group 6 Feet Over and Dual Purpose. He is a season ticket holder to Goodnight Theater Collective. He couldn't go to the first show. We had bought tickets, but Michael still had additional 2 tickets, so he gave those to us so we could take a couple of friends. It was a wonderful show, and then Michael even did get to go the following night then, so just a great, generous offer from Michael Sorensen. The other, while I was at Goodnight Theater Collective's show, The Rewind Cabaret, I see Jason Fitzer, who works at the Washington Pavilion. He's been on this program before to talk about his photography. A great photographer. Well, if you've noticed on my website, DaveHollyHour.com, I've had a picture that I took of the Ark and put my logo along with it up on the header. You know, what they call the, some will call it the mast, others will call it the header or the big banner and so forth. Well, he has lots of pictures of the Ark of Dreams in downtown Sioux Falls, night pictures when it's all lit up and so forth. And so I asked him if I could use one because I was redoing the website. And he said, sure, no problem. So he gave me permission for that. And what was really cool with all the different ones he has, my logo colors are purple and orange. He had one where the arc was lit up purple and orange, and it reflected down into the river as well. And I could put that oval logo of mine right smack dab in the middle. So, again, thank you to Generosity for my friends Michael Sorensen and Jason Fitzer. I appreciate both of you guys. And you get the toast. The Weekend Eve Toast has been brought to you by Ale Hop Brewery Tours. No matter what brewery in Sioux Falls is your favorite, Ale Hop Brewery Tours lets you and your friends choose any or all of the 8 local breweries. Best part, they take care of the driving in a very cool van that sits up to 6. Book your private tours online at alehopbrewerytours.com. If you're already out and about on a weekend, hop on one of their public tours. For more info on the public tours, call 605-777-2183. That is 605-777-2183. Take it from some others that have gone. I would recommend this tour to anyone, beer lover or not. Thanks for the great experience. Ale Hop Brewery Tours, where micro fans meet micro brews. And what else do we like to do as we lead into our great conversations coming up? We want to pass along this
honorable mention.
So what was it in the past week that made old Davy boy here smile, guffaw, chuckle, slap the knee silly, whatever you want to say? Well, it's a little bit personal this time because it was partly me. I want to give it out, the shout out for honorable mention this week to the new cast of Gunsmoke. You're saying, what? Are they remaking it? No. There were some of us that got called on to provide a little sketch comedy, more like basically 99% improv from us, for a gentleman who was an outgoing, I believe, or at least, you know, he was overseeing the Odd Fellows. And so at their evening meal, we got to provide some surprise entertainment. He's a huge lover of Gunsmoke. So 5 of us became the new cast of Gunsmoke. I played Doc. Ryan Fossum, who has been on the program before, played Matt Dillon, the marshal. Festus was played by our very own Zach Dresch. And then we had Miss Kitty, played by Angie Muntz, who I've acted with several times, and I've also acted with Lisa Anderson several times, and she was an additional saloon girl. She's the one that set it up, and it was just a fun, fun time getting back together, using some of the old improv chops a little bit. Had a blast. And I won't tell everybody what Angie did with her money. All right. Coming up later in the show, we're going to speak to local author Kale Lawrence about the new book that she has out called The Magi Menagerie. But up next, another generous person, a man that's been very good to the arts in the Sioux Empire, Ricardo Terabelsi. Hit that name right on the head, too, he told me. But anyway, Ricardo was kind enough as well to let us record many of our interviews now at the R-Wine Bar. And we talk all about that coming up next on the Dave Holly Hour.
Sure, they have darts, and you've heard me talk about how ruggedly handsome the trivia host is, but all caps fun never stops at the Sky Lounge and Tea. And fun is best had with your friends enjoying live entertainment, as in live and local. Yeah, the Sky Lounge believes in giving you the best bands, solo artists, and comedians from the area. The Neo Johnsons, Elizabeth Hunstead, Skylar Volks, as well as many others. And a great staff will make sure you enjoy your fun at the Sky Lounge in T, South Dakota.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tooney know excellence is in you. That's why they provide you with excellent care at Exo Chiropractic, improving your overall health in spirit, body, mind, and will. Get results the natural way. Arrange a consultation, 605-332-9235 or exochiros.com. Excellent care for excellent people. XL Chiropractic, located at 4309 South Racket Drive in Sioux Falls.
He's just the eyeballs. Once again, Dave Holy.
Welcome back, everybody. Always a pleasure to be with you on a Thursday, or as we like to call it, weekend eve, as we get ready for so many fun things happening in and around Sioux Falls, the greater Sioux Falls metro area, which we affectionately call the Sioux Empire, and all the arts and entertainment. And it's not just about the people that are performing. It's about the people that help make it possible for people to be performing. Ricardo Terabelsi, how are you? How'd I do on that last name?
Fantastic. I'm impressed, actually.
Thank you.
Most people add a K for some reason. Terabelsi?
Oh, really?
I'm like,
that would kind of take away from the Italian, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. I would think that would be another region of Europe
that we'd
be talking about then.
Yeah. Fun fact, Terabelsi is actually not Italian.
Oh,
my
kidding.
First name, Ricardo, with two C's. That's the Italian version
right.
of Ricardo. Is Italian, for sure. But Terabelsi is actually Lebanese.
Lebanese.
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
My dad's from Syria. Moved to Italy, but my mom had me,
uh-huh.
And we moved to the States.
Well, and what did you bring to the States but great wine and great atmosphere, along with a whole bunch of music here at our wine bar?
Yeah, you know, and never, maybe you're going to get to this, but it was never my intention to become known for live music. It was kind of almost like a whim, but I knew the space was special, you know, with all the exposed quartzite and the beams and, you know, the building was built in 1900. It's a lot of history. And so I call my good friend Jim Spears, who I've worked with before in hiring jazz bands and putting together ensembles and whatnot. And I said, Jim, I'm going to open a wine bar in this really cool building. And I need your opinion. Do you think we should do live music here? What's your opinion? So, of course, he came down and checked out the space and was like, are you kidding? This is perfect.
That's right.
Let's book a jazz band.
And just feet from where he works, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was pretty easy to get him over here.
yeah.
But what's been amazing is the fact that, first of all, you've been a very good supporter of a great group in town, Sioux Falls Jazz and Blues Society. Mm-hmm. And to see so much jazz in here by itself amongst all the other live music that you do has just been great because, you know, that's... There aren't a lot of people that go jazz, you know, but we love it when we've got a jazz place to go to.
Yeah, when we first started doing it, so the first show was November of 2018, and that was on a Thursday, and we have booked a jazz band every Thursday since. So we're coming up on our 3-year anniversary.
Amazing, that's great.
I mean, we've had jazz during blizzards. I remember hiring Jim McKinney. You know, he lives in Brookings.
That's right.
There was a big winter storm coming in January or February, whenever it was. And so he called and he's like, I can't make it. I'm snowed in. And so I called Jim Spears. He's my go-to guy. I'm like, oh man, Jim can't make it. I said, but I think, we're going to be open. You know, it's a winter storm, but it's not like it's 6 feet of snow. So it's, you know, we're South Dakota.
Right. We're used to it.
We're going to open. And he goes, well, let's put something together. So we put together a trio. It was one of the best attended shows we've ever had. And then I started booking those three guys because they really hadn't played here before. Mm-hmm. And I love discovering new people. And that's, I don't know, I get approached a lot about, oh, can you hire me or hire this guy or whatever? And we try to give as many people a chance as possible just because that's how we discover the next Jim Spears or the next Emmanuel Michael whoever,
the
right?
The kid can play.
Oh my gosh. But we're honored that he's graced our halls, so to speak, with his skills. Yeah, this is a running joke because when he was in high school, I kept joking with him. I'm like, hey, don't forget where you got your start because this kid's going to headline places.
Oh, no doubt.
You know? And he's so humble.
Yeah.
He's asking, can I bust like plates and glasses for
me.
You after the show? I'm like, no, take it easy.
Sit.
Can I help you with your equipment?
Yeah.
You know, it's me asking him. No, he's a great kid. So we try to discover new bands all the time. But then again, it's hard to not book our favorites. So
true.
I shouldn't say our favorites. It's our guests. I mean, that's how I do the wine list. That's how I do our food menu. It's all about the guest, what they want. And so, of course, you know, there's some familiar names that play here pretty regularly. And and they draw a great crowd.
Well, not only because of that, but because they're in 85 groups too.
Yeah, there's a lot of
there's a lot of different trios,
a lot of combinations,
lot of combos, which is great.
It's so much fun,
and that's, you know, one of the fun parts about jazz being the improv portion of music, and also, you know, a good American music genre. Actually, you know, people tend to forget that.
Right.
And so that's why I love seeing it around so much. And I'm so thankful that you brought it here. But it's not the only thing you brought here. Man, you've expanded. Yeah, you've got 3 years in the books basically on Thursday nights. But you've added other things as well.
We did. After I kind of realized, wow, this live jazz thing every Thursday is kind of working out. Like, that's a draw. Like, it's just another thing that enhances our ambiance and the experience. You know, we're all about the experience here at our wine bar and kitchen. So I decided to reach out to Elizabeth Hunstead and try to book some Saturday night music with some solo artists. And she's pretty well connected in the music scene. And it was no problem booking a different person every weekend. Basically, for the first 3 months, we started doing Saturdays. So now it was every Thursday, every Saturday for like 2 years. And of course, we took a little break during a
pandemic or whatever it's called.
but when we reopened after, you know, we were closed pretty much all of, well, some of March, all of April, some of May of 2020, reopened in May. And then I brought music right back in June because I felt, well, I mean, first of all, these
people,
all these artists,
right? Yeah,
weren't performing. So I wanted to make sure they were, I mean, well, let's get you booked, because I pay all these bands. And and then guests kind of wanted it, so we did an entire summer just outside on the patio live music, which turned into this another big thing for us, where people look forward to sitting on our patio in between the two buildings. It's full shade, good wine, good food, great music. It was just a great combination. So we did Thursdays and Saturdays for a while, and then at the end of last year, at the end of 2020, when, you know, we transitioned back to inside and all of our live music inside, Jeremy Hegg started making appearances on Thursdays to play with in different groups.
One of those combos.
And I was like, you know, every time Jeremy plays, it seems like we have a few more guests that show up. I wonder why that is. Well, of course, we all know why. Jeremy's pretty brilliant. And so I asked him, I said, hey, I wonder if I can get you and your brother to play here. He's like, yeah, we'd love to. So I booked them one night. Place is absolutely packed in a good way, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we have lots of space, so we were able to space things out. But yeah, they packed the place. They have a huge following. And so I knew there was something I had to do. So I said, hey, how about we get you here more often, like weekly? And I remember talking to specifically John Hegg. I said, what's your calendar like? Like, it would make sense to put you in on Fridays, because right now, currently, I have Thursday and Saturday. And so why not put it right in between? And I said, can I book you every Friday in 2021 for the whole year? And he goes, well, let me check my calendar. Yes. You know, and they, you know, because they're no different. They're not immune to being with the pandemic. And they took a hit. A lot of events canceled and weddings, whatever else, you know, they booked so much. I think it's starting to come back for them specifically as well. But it's been great to be able to tell people, yeah, join us on Friday, or for that matter, any Friday, and you'll have the Hegg brothers playing live here at our wine bar. It's been great. And they've loved promoting the fact that, you know, they're basically have a residency at the our wine bar and kitchen.
Exactly.
On Fridays. Yeah. So yeah, we have three nights in a row of just phenomenal music. And it's funny you say it's Thursday, which is weekend eve. For us, it's the start of the weekend.
Indeed.
You probably personify
that more than any other business in town.
Yeah. And then we do a couple of their special events most Tuesdays. I would love to say every Tuesday, but there are some schedule conflicts. But Jeff Gunderson, very well-known guitar player here in town, plays at 7:30 on Tuesday nights. And really just as kind of background music. And it complements. We do a free wine tasting every Tuesday. So it's a great compliment. And again, it's another night of live music. And then Wednesday is a great day. The first Wednesday of the month.
Yeah.
That's our jazz jam night. And basically it's a open mic for musicians. And it's unbelievable how many people show up with, you know, a trombone case in hand, or a saxophone, or a trumpet, or we've had electric violin, we've had clarinet, we've had just voice, People show up with their sticks, they jump on the drum kit. So basically we hire a rhythm section, so a drummer typically led by Dan Heyer, and then usually John Kelly on keyboard and Ruben or another bassist on bass.
And yeah, even Ruben had his own trio one night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw him for three times in a row before it was the Ruben Rodriguez trio.
Yeah. Ruben, you know, we've had, and what's cool is who shows up, because you wonder, like, who's going to show up? Well, it's not just aspiring musicians, but it's, you get high school kids. We've had the O'Gorman jazz combo, basically all five or six of them show up together, and they go up and they just take over the stage, which is awesome. We've had college kids, again, similar things, the Augie jazz band and kind of parts and components of it. And then they all overlap, and you get a guitarist from Brandon and a guitarist from wherever, and they all play together. So it's just groups. It's really, it's a cool opportunity for especially younger musicians to be able to play with seasoned pros, and area band directors show up and play. I mean, it's just, it's a really cool, completely improvised night.
Right. And the great thing about this community when it comes to arts and entertainment is it's not competitive.
Right.
It's a collaborative affair that's going on. And it's just, it's growing so much. You know, I grew up in the area down in Rock Rapids, and you know, Sioux Falls was the big place to come on your first date, that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it was mostly going to movie theaters, occasionally going out to eat. And then just over this past decade, really, it's been such a boom, and it's been so fun to watch. And, of course, you know, we've got the sculpture walk, and we've got so many things going on. There's more places for people to play. There's more places for people to display their art. And thank you for what you've done. And you said, you know, it really wasn't your intent to be known as a jazz bar so much. More that you were bringing, you know, good wine and good food to the place. And, you know, that's another aspect we can really talk about, too, is the fact that, you know, the culinary arts are just that as well. Arts.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you got that right.
And,
well,
and
so is wine making.
Yeah. And you're putting on, putting on something all the time, and you've got yourself, you know, some great staff members that help out down here, and it's such a great place to come to. But so, what do you look for when it comes to making a presentation besides providing music here?
I mean, we, like I said, we want it to be experiential, even something as simple as when we bring you the check at the end of your meal, we bring you a cork.
True. Yeah.
And we say, here's a cork. And a lot of people look at us confused, like, why are you giving me a cork? We just opened a bottle of wine, we have a cork, or we just had two glasses of wine, what's with the cork? And then we ask very nicely to, hey, you sign the cork, put a drawing, you can put, basically decorate it any way you want, and put it in our cork wall. And so before you leave, you drop it in, there's a little hole in the glass in the front, and you drop it in, and you join these thousands of other corks that, it's just a way for people to kind of leave behind a, you know, their mark on, they've been here and they're part of our history. And we've filled it up twice so far, and since we've been open, almost 3 years, and we're probably a quarter of the way there already.
and don't you usually have some promotions go along
with
that?
Yeah,
too, you
know? Yeah, when it's full, we take a picture of it, and we have people kind of guess how many corks are in the cork wall contest. And if you're really taking notes, the last two times it's been around 6,000. So that's usually a good guess.
Yeah.
And then we kind of at random, we pick corks out, like, you know, and then of course most people put their name and number or an email.
Right.
We take a picture of it, put it on social media. Hey, so-and-so, you won. And I usually pick a dozen of those and give away some bottles of wine.
Yeah. And, you know, you are a great marketer. And, you know, besides that, one of the best things I ever saw was the $5 off pen that you gave away earlier this year. I loved that. I
forgot about that.
Well, especially because the best dessert in town, in my opinion, the lemonade cake.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And it just happens to be $5.
There you go.
So I brought my pen in, and I got myself a free dessert. But
nice.
I always will pay for that anyway, because it's, first of all, it's incredible. Second of all, it's also one of the best prices that you could find on dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just incredible what you have to offer, from the beginning to the end, like you said, you know, the fun stuff with the cork, putting your name on there, putting it in the wall, maybe guessing, you know, a few months later as to how many are in there. So fun times are always here. Now, what did you get into first, wine or food?
Wow. No one's ever asked me that. That's a good question.
See, I get one good question per interview.
That's really good. I think, wow, I'm trying to think of how far back I should go because...
Well, you're only 29, so it could be that far.
Well, yeah, a couple decades ago. When we first moved to the States, my grandmother actually moved with us, so my mom's mom. So imagine having a little Italian grandmother
who
didn't speak any English. The only English she learned was from watching soap operas during the day. So you can imagine what she knew how to say. Because my grandmother and my mom were in the house, I was surrounded by cooking all day, 24 hours a day. There was always something simmering or something in the oven or something, whatever, cooking up a storm. So I was around really good food growing up, but it was also around, you know, a bottle of Chianti at the dinner table every night. Mm-hmm. I think food first, but then the passion really started, you know, when we moved to Sioux Falls 22 years ago. I was the manager at Spezia, the old Spezia on 26 and Western, and kind of really got into learning more and more about wine. I already knew a lot about Italian wine just from my upbringing. And then I made a name for myself of becoming kind of known for, I'm an expert in Italian wine. Like you want a Barolo or an Amarone or a Barbera or an Orvieto, whatever it is, you come to me and I'll either source it or I have it on my list. Like we have a pretty extensive Italian section. So then I got really serious about wine after at Spezia for 4 years, and I sold wine at Johnson Brothers. So I was a wine sales rep, got sent on a couple wine trips to wine country. It kind of solidified, I'm serious about this. This is what I want to do. And then I think the wine bar idea started back then. It's at least, 15, 20 years ago.
Wheels were churning.
I had this idea for this thing. And it was just a matter of the right timing. You know, it's all about timing and location. And this location, Jesus, it's wow. Started great 3 years ago, and it's getting even better now.
Yeah.
With all the, Rail Yard Flats just opened up, Highball, craft cocktail bars in there. They're phenomenal. You got Sharapa that's going to do a $160 million expansion right in our backyard behind our parking lot. Sioux Steel development that's going to get done. Land behind 8th and Railroad, between the 8th and Railroad and the railroad, that's going to get developed. I mean, there's so much happening on the East Bank.
Yeah, it's a great place to be downtown Sioux Falls, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite wine?
I get asked that a lot.
Mm-hmm. See, that one's not that great of a question because I figured got to ask that one a lot.
I always say Brunello only because it's people that don't know a lot about wine have never heard of it. People who do know wine know how good that wine is. To give you some perspective, Brunello, it's made from Sangiovese grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So same grapes that are used to make Chianti. So it's from the south of Tuscany.
Because I do like my Chianti.
I do. It's from a small town called Montalcino. So the full name is Brunello di Montalcino. Aged for usually about 4 years in oak and another year in the bottle before it's released. So this is a big, tannic, bold, kind of leathery tobacco, dried cherry. There's so many great flavors going on in this wine. It's very ageable. I have almost a 25-year-old Brunello in my personal wine cellar that I'm waiting next summer for our 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, I was going to say, there's probably some celebratory
and
it's
a 97 Brunello, which is pretty special. It's like, they called it the vintage of the century because the grapes were just that good that year. So it's pretty special to me. Yeah, so Brunello, and it's from Tuscany. I'm from Tuscany. It all kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah. What has been your favorite part of owning this place?
People. I'm referring to all people, whether mm-hmm. it's staff that I've hired and met and gotten to know really well and love taking care of them. And then same thing with guests. Love to meet new guests and learn about them, take care of them. But also to see that, you know, Sioux Falls is such a wonderfully supportive, loyal place to live, especially the pandemic, I think just really opened my eyes to a lot of good people that are out there that supported us unconditionally.
All the goodwill and humanity.
Everyone came out and they're like, and you could just see when they were, or you could tell when they were ordering food to go, which we pivoted very quickly to that, they would add on an extra dessert or an extra appetizer or I'll just throw in a bottle of wine, or how about give me a case of wine, or someone will come in and say, throw in a $200 gift card. They're just finding reasons to spend money here. And everyone would say the same thing. We're here to support you now because we want you to be here when this thing is over. Yeah. And that just meant the world to me.
And it's also nice to get support like that because, it, first of all, keeping it local, but also just the fact that you know, people want to see you succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a great feeling, you know, because some people will go into business and people won't darken the doorway.
Right.
But they also have to realize when they go into business, they got to do the same thing that you do. And I told you this a while back about an old friend of my father's. My dad was a CPA in Rock Rapids for about 60 years. One of his clients owned a supper club down in a small town called Ashton, Iowa. It was the Cedar Cabin, old-fashioned supper club. And Al Madaloni, another Italian boy.
Yeah.
And Al was there all the time, remembered everybody's names, spoke to them at their tables, not just there because it was his business, or not the, just there to watch over his staff. He was there to make sure that everybody got greeted and thanked. And I think when I see you walking around, whatever night of the week it is, you're not taking the weekend off or anything. And I just sit there and I smile because it reminds me so much of that. And it's just, you know, one of those things that I love about, you know, a good local business that, that cares, like you said, about the people and so forth.
That's very nice. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
And thank you as well for allowing us to have some places now to do some of our recordings for our podcast.
Of course.
And it's been phenomenal to get to know you a little bit and stop by and take in so much of the jazz and some of the other live music. And my gosh, I even think Santa Claus sang once last year.
We had there was an appearance. And
appearance of Santa Claus.
I believe he's making another appearance.
An encore.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good.
Let's go.
Well, you know, you're here so often that I doubt you get a lot of time to be out and about. But when you do, what do you like to do?
You know, about a month and a half ago, we my wife and I took our oldest son and his roommate to Napa Valley. It was just nice to get away for, it was just, you know, it was a quick, you know, 3.5 days, but we did a lot of wine tasting, which was kind of the purpose. And obviously I don't get away to Napa that often, but if I can and have the time, I just love Napa. But if I'm here in town, you know, we're usually hanging out with our kids. You know, we have two in college and one graduating from high school this year. So pretty soon it will be, you know, everyone says, oh, are you ready for an empty nest? And I'm like, it's not really that empty. Like our middle son is going to USF, so he's around all the time.
Right.
Our other son's at SDSU and he runs back home, you know, as frequently as he wants or, you know, and it's, we see him quite a bit as well. So it's nice to have both kids at least choose colleges here with, you know, close. And I think my youngest is looking at Dakota State, Madison. So might have all three here.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And La Familia.
La Familia.
Yeah. All right. Ricardo, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's been great. And I have the feeling we'll be seeing you probably later this week.
That's probably a good bet.
All righty. Take care. Appreciate it. We'll be back with more of the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Hi, my name is Jesse Moffitt, and I'm not a piano player. I'm a comic magician and hypnotist. I've been performing for over 20 years. I've performed at many events, corporate events, holiday parties, post-prom parties, graduation parties, state and county fairs, festivals, just about anything you can imagine. The funniest thing about the Magic Act is that I use a ton of audience participation, and that can make things really interesting.
Put it down the front of your shirt. Stop being so, I'm not, my hand won't follow.
The best thing about the hypnosis show is that the volunteers and their imaginations really make it a blast.
Holy crap, dude, did you see what you just did? You could do that possibly to girls.
For booking information, go to Jesse Moffitt Entertainment on Facebook. That's JESSEMOFFITT. Or call 605-929-0964.
Welcome back, everybody. It just never stops. finding new people, meeting new people that are creatives, whether it be music, whether it be the visual arts, spoken arts, or written. Joining us now, local author Kale Lawrence. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Just met you a while back. I think we had already been friends on, I don't know if it was Facebook. I think it was might have been Instagram at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then started following a little bit. And then we have a mutual friend and said, hey, you've got to interview her. You know, she's an author. And it's like, oh, okay. And then you were having a book signing just a few weeks back. And got there early enough to say, hey, we got to go someplace else, but we wanted to meet you and get you signed up to be on the podcast.
Yes.
All right. So here you are.
Woohoo.
Welcome.
So excited. I've been looking forward to this all day long.
Excellent. As have I. And you know what's fun is, you know, anytime that you get to meet somebody new and you kind of have that instant respect type admiration form and so forth, and especially when people are happy and you know, nice is always a good thing.
Yes,
and it's like, hey, this is a gal that's going to be a fun time to interview and talk to about what she does. So tell us the name of the new book, and then we're going to go into some of the details about some of the things with the book, not just in terms of the prose, but as well design and so forth. This is really cool. So fire away first.
Awesome. So I wrote the first of a three-part series, or at least it's a planned three-part series, called The Magi Menagerie. So it's a little bit of a mouthful.
Yes,
but,
it is.
But still, I mean, I think it's the perfect title for a book that's going to be hopefully, I don't know, somebody's favorite.
Well, and I think it probably will be. I mean, I'm just a few chapters into it. Didn't have a lot of time over the weekend to read like I wanted, because I ordered, because when we were at your book signing, you had paperback and then you had some hardcovers showing off what it looked like, including the one that you take the actual paper cover off and the hardcover itself.
Yes.
Is beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. So anyone who ordered a first edition copy from Amazon, from Target, even Barnes & Noble, I think, carries it. They have a different version for them. But the first edition hardback copy, you take off the dust jacket and there's this beautiful, like, purpley pink celestial type print on it. It's just beautiful.
Which you also get on the dust cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And so forth. Mm-hmm. So you get that regardless. But if you, it's worth it because it's just really so cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you're going to want to have as a collection. And by the time it's all said and done, if it, as you were planning, goes all three, that's going to be great. So what, I'm always interested in titles.
Yeah.
Because you self-publish, for one thing, correct?
Yep.
So you could decide the title.
I did.
It didn't have to be left up to an editor or a publisher.
Yes.
What made you think Magi Menagerie?
Well, I actually had this random thought one day, and the title came to me first. So before I even knew the story, before I even knew my characters, the title just jumped into my head. And I've always been interested in the Magi, the three wise men from the Bible. And I knew that I wanted to write a story based on the Magi as a secret society almost. So I knew that I wanted to say Magi in the title, and I just was throwing around some ideas in my head. And I really liked the word menagerie, especially because I wanted this to be representative of a very diverse group of people. And I just thought that it was so fitting.
So give us a hint without giving away the book as to what this story entails.
Yeah, so this story is told in the perspective of three different individuals, all at different points in their life. So one of them is an immigrant who's 17 years old. He's from Turkey. Or in 1906, it was the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first perspective, and he's relocating with his family, but then a horrific accident happens and he's kind of thrust into this world that he has, you know, no idea about. First of all, he's not familiar with Ireland, and that's where they were relocating. So it's really about him finding out who he is, but then also stumbling on the secret society of the Third Order of the Magi, which is the focal point of the whole book.
All right. And you said that this is really a three-part? We're having a trilogy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're looking forward to it. All right. So you mentioned the Ottoman Empire and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What type of research did you do, or did you have a knowledge of things already that you wanted to incorporate? And then from there, dig even deeper.
Yeah. It was really much a journey as I was writing. So I did a little bit of research. Originally, when I was writing, I was calling Constantinople Istanbul.
Yeah.
And then I researched it and I was like, oh, it didn't become Istanbul until later. so I had to kind of backtrack a little bit and just learn more about how the world was in 1906. And as I would write, I would find myself going over to Google and saying, hey, did this exist in 1906? Because I wanted to, even though it's a fantasy, I really wanted to ground it in some sort of reality so that it seems like it could have happened in 1906.
So a history lesson came along with this.
Yeah.
Oh, and it does. It does for the reader then, too. You know, that's the nice thing. But what about, you know, the writing process? You know, you've done the research and you've already had the idea of what you want the book to be about. Mm-hmm. How do you put the two together?
It's a challenge. I kept this notebook of notes based on my research. I would kind of compile all of these URLs of different sources that I found were very fascinating, or they were very helpful in just everything that I had to research. But really, I did find myself not necessarily just doing research or just plotting. It almost happened in real time with each other. Based on some of the things that I did research and find out, it kind of spurred this other idea, and I just kind of took it, and yeah, it was a journey.
Did you hit that part that I understand a lot of writers will do, where they're writing because they've got their idea, and then all of a sudden the character takes over?
Yeah.
And you've got to go a different direction than what you thought.
Yes.
What's that like?
Oh my gosh. It's almost like I'm watching this stage production in my head and I'm just writing down what's happening. It's almost like they take control. So a lot of times I say, like, sometimes my characters will just say something and I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? Or, you know, they'll just throw a tantrum in the middle of a scene and I'm like, okay, let's play with this a little bit. Let's see what's going on with you. And that actually just really led me to places I didn't even know I was going. So a little bit of that, you know, plotter versus pantser kind of, you know, territory, but it was interesting.
With that happening, though, do you still have a lot of rewrites that you go through?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Even without a publisher and an editor, you're still doing rewrites.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So I actually did have an editor. I think one of the most important things that you can do as an indie author is to hire an editor, because you want to be taken seriously by people. You want to make sure that your work is as polished as it possibly could be. So I did work with an editor. And I also worked with a friend of mine who is a film and writing faculty member at the University of Illinois in Springfield. She had a lot of really good ideas and feedback. And that was, you know, the first step of editing. So she looked over the first draft, but I actually rewrote the story 6 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
The whole story?
Kind of. I mean, it kept the same structure, but I rewrote a lot of sections, especially in drafts like 3 to 4. It changed the most. So
how much of draft 1 is in the final draft?
The first chapter is actually very, very similar.
Okay.
It kept its thumbprint, if you will, throughout all the drafts. There was only just a very minor change at the beginning, like the opening. But other than that, it stayed almost exactly the same, which I think is beautiful.
What was time frame from, okay, first of all, are you a typist, or do you actually scribble a little to begin with?
Sometimes when I'm in the idea process, I'll jot stuff down in a notebook, but I type everything out.
Okay, but from point A to point Z. Mm-hmm. What was our time frame?
About 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was dedicated to this project for a long time, especially over, you know, the when everyone was locked down for COVID. This really kept me grounded and focused and happy.
Well, it's your passion.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So what type of people do you read then?
Kind of a smattering of different people. So this sounds kind of weird, but usually when I'm writing a project, I stop reading altogether. Like I want something that I'm writing to be very authentic to me and not mm-hmm. just subconsciously copy what other people have done. So I just started reading again, but I would say, you know, in my past, I really loved reading Garth Nix's Keys to the Kingdom series. It's mm-hmm. like a fantasy for kids. I love Lemony Snicket and his dark humor. Mm-hmm. I love, of course, J.K. Rowling, C.S. Lewis, you know, Tolkien, all the classics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They really...
Gotta get them in.
Yeah. Well, they formed the foundation of my love for fantasy. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So when you sit down and write, are you a I must write X amount of pages person, or do you go one night, oh, I really don't want to, but I'm gonna. And what yeah. produces the best writing?
At first, I would force myself to try to get in 1,000 words, 2,000 words. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that forcing yourself really just results in writing that you're not proud of, and you're just trying to get a word count in. Mm. So after a while, I basically said, okay, I'm not going to hold myself to any word counts. I'm not going to hold myself to any page counts. I'm just going to write, and what feels comfortable is what I'm going to do. And so that's when I actually saw my really good writing come out. And I mean, some days you don't write, even though you really want to. You're just like, I'm not feeling it. And it's just not going to be good, even if you try. So I did have some of those days as well.
Well, I can imagine. I would think everyone would go through that. But at least for you, during COVID, it was more of a spurning off for you. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you sit down and you start writing and you've got a character, what do you like to get in first about the character? Description of, in terms of a physical, or more the spirit and emotion, especially when you're writing fantasy?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, right off the bat, I think I want to start describing who they are. But honestly, just reflecting on the Magi Menagerie, I really do start with who they are inside, their personality, their goals, their wants, their needs. That really kind of comes through first. And then I try to sprinkle in their description.
I was so glad when you said Magi Menagerie being, you know, you thought of the title first. Mm-hmm. Because I'm one of those that I will hear a couple of words back to back and go, boy, wouldn't that be a great name for a band?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a great title for a book or a movie, you know, and different things
yes.
like that. So I'm glad that there are other people that have similar thoughts like that. Where along are you on the process of book number two then at this point?
I am kind of done with mapping out the whole story.
Okay.
I actually had it all mapped out before. So when I started the first book, I knew it was going to be 3 books because I had mapped out the whole story. So I know where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
But I did change some things in the last draft of the first book that really will change everything for book two.
Based off of that process we were yeah. talking about earlier. Yeah.
Like some of those plot twists, I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? Okay, I guess I have to fix that in book two. So I am kind of going back and restructuring what every chapter is going to look like. And I haven't actually started writing yet, but mm-hmm. it's all
the formulation part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What have you written before?
Published or just anything?
Either way.
So I actually back in 2011, I published a book called Alex in Wonderstrand, The Clairvoyance Clock, which was also going to be a series. It still is, but I, over the years, kind of lost my passion for writing. And so I wanted to do something different, especially when I got the idea for the Magi Menagerie. It's like I found that spark again. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to follow this where it goes. And then I can always go back and finish, you know, Alex in Wonderstrand as well. But yeah, so that was published originally in 2011. A remastered edition was published in 2016.
So you like to keep busy writing.
I do.
Now the question is, you've got, you know, another two books of this planned.
Yep.
Do you already have some things whirring around in the brain that you're saying, oh, I've got to write about this at some point,
yeah,
too?
Yes. I've always been intrigued with kind of more contemporary young adult fiction, but more so along the lines of horror and paranormal stories. Mm-hmm. So I'm always writing like a historical fantasy or something like, you know, that's very steampunk or very much set in the turn of the century, 1900s. But I really wanted to challenge myself at some point in time and try more of a contemporary and see how that goes and just kind of test the waters a little.
I can't wait. I just have the feeling it's all going to be great no matter what. Yeah. What got you into writing?
I've always been writing. I mean, since I knew how to, I remember when I was 5 or 6, I would actually ask my mom, how do you spell tomorrow? And she's like, why do you want to know that? And I'm, you know, sitting here writing out these little stories with like loose leaf paper folded in half. And I would illustrate and write my own stories. And I think the first book I ever wrote was called The Big, Big Fly, and it was about a fly that just grew bigger and bigger and bigger, and then people had to move out of their house because it took over the whole house. So
I think I saw that in a 1956 movie,
really?
In black and white. And, yeah.
Yeah.
They used to play on Sunday afternoons when I was a kid, you know?
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Science fiction that scared the crap out of you then, and now you look
exactly
at it and go,
yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. But I just, you know, I just always enjoyed storytelling. And I really didn't know that that was a talent of mine until later when I was more in like, you know, 10, 11, 12 uh-huh. in that time frame. And that's when I actually started submitting writing to writing contests and submitting writing. And I don't know if anyone remembers this, but the PBS Kids show Zoom.
Right.
Back in the late 90s had like a remake, I guess, because it was originally like a 70s show or something. I don't know. But anyway, I submitted a book to them and they aired it on the show and they animated all my illustrations and it was so cool.
That's incredible.
So, yeah. And that was now, when I was 12.
Okay. And you were already kind of doing that on your own. Was there anybody yep. along the way, a teacher or anybody that
yeah.
you know, gave you some mentorship and so forth?
Yeah, definitely. So two ladies, incredible ladies, really helped me with my journey. Cheryl Monks was one of my teachers in sixth grade, I believe. And then Miss Chastine. Both of those ladies.
That sounds like a name from a novel already.
Yeah, she was very much this like personality. I mean, she was just, you know, a character herself,
uh-huh.
but she understood the mechanics of writing. Both of them did. And, they really just helped me explore what writing could look like. And like I mentioned, the mechanics of it, like how do you form a quotation? You know, what's the punctuation needed there? They would look over just my random creative stuff that wasn't even assignment based. And they would give me tips and tricks. And, you know, I remember Miss Monks actually saying, you really like writing, don't you? And I said, of course I do. This is my life. And I think that's why she was like, oh, okay. You're going to be a writer someday, and I'm going to give you the tools that you need to succeed.
But so. It's not your full-time job.
Indeed.
Right.
I mean,
I would guess you'd like it to be?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I love content writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've written a lot of stuff over the years, mostly being in the marketing industry. But I did, for a while, I was in the television broadcast industry, too. So I would actually write the news a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I've written stuff just in marketing for various clients that have been all over, you know, cable TV. So I always tell people, you've probably heard my writing. You just didn't know it.
I would think that having, you know, marketing background would be very beneficial for someone that is self-publishing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. That's actually one of the number one things that I tell people who are indie authors is you have to know your stuff when it comes to marketing, because marketing is just as important as your book itself. You need to know how to get out there. You need to get in front of people. You need to present your work in a way that makes it enticing and people want to read it. And yeah, it's very important.
And what have the readers been saying?
So far, I've gotten really good good feedback. And I actually have several people who said I was so enticed by the cover and by the by the blurb. Yeah. So I was like, oh, good. My marketing has done its
job. Exactly. You know, and I wanted to talk about that because, you know, you didn't do the actual artwork, though.
No.
Okay. Because just the way of your presence, whoever did that certainly put your soul into it.
They did.
In terms of what it looks like. And I'm just, it jumps off the page, literally.
It does. I worked with a cover designer overseas, the company More Books Design, and they did an incredible job. They gave me like this questionnaire of like what I was looking for. So they had no idea who I was as a person. And they came back with the proposal, and I was like, holy crap, how did you know? Like, this is great. This is amazing. And yeah, they were just so easy to work with, and they'll be getting my, you know, next two books as well. So.
Oh, excellent. Well, we look forward to those. All right. So when you're not, you know, full-time marketing and then marketing your own book and writing and writing and writing and writing and writing and writing. What do you like to do for entertainment? What do you like to go out and see or read and so forth?
You know, I used to always go to shows, you know, any sort of like stage show production. I haven't done that recently, though. And I think it really kind of stopped, you know, just before COVID and everything was shut down. So I haven't gotten back to the theater, but I love theater. I was in theater for the longest time, in community theater and high school theater. And so I just really enjoy those productions because, you know, it's so different than a movie because you can actually feel the emotions as people are portraying them on stage. And I just, there's just something beautiful about that, about being in the same room as somebody who's, you know, conducting their own art and just, yeah, it's great.
Any other hobbies?
I do like swimming. I used to do a lot of swimming as well. I haven't recently, but swimming is just fun. I taught myself how to do all of the different strokes. So like, you know, butterfly, breaststroke, freestyle. I watched YouTube and watch these like Olympic swimmers like demonstrating how you do the freestyle stroke, and I'm like, I'm gonna do that. And so I just self-taught myself, and that was really fun. It's a good break from writing because you can stimulate your brain in another way, and it's just so refreshing.
All right, Kale Lawrence, local author, The Magi Menagerie. Just love that name. Love the cover, too. And more to come on those. But where can people, in the meantime, get it right now?
Yep, they can go to Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble, Target. Basically, anywhere you can buy books, you can get The Magi Menagerie.
Excellent. And highly recommended via my wife. I'm already into it and looking forward to when I got a few more hours to read a whole bunch at once. All right, Kale Lawrence, thanks again. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to wrap up the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself, too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment.
605-334-1463. Isn't that nice?
Thanks again for listening. It's always a pleasure, no matter if you download or you stream. You just take a look at some of the show notes and so forth, or you catch it on the Dave Holly Hour, not the Dave Holly Hour, it's just DaveHollyHour.com website. It's been revamped
went with a different provider, and I like what they're providing. And it's really cool for you, because now when you go to the episodes page, all the episodes are on there, and you can even search like a particular name. If you wanted to say, hey, when was Joe Schmo on the program? It would bring up, you put Joe Schmo in the search, it'll bring up all the episodes Joe Schmo has been in and so forth. So I'm really liking that part. So thank you. No matter how you get there. Plus, you know, now every episode's on there and you can just play it. It's not just an episode guide as to who was on. You can click it right there. And there you go. You have my podcast whenever you'd like. Plus, you can go ahead and follow. We'll have a button for that as well. Still a work in progress. Got some stuff we want to add to it and so forth. But thank you. Double thank you to Ricardo from R Wine Bar. First of all, letting us record in his facility a few times the past couple of weeks, but also for everything that he does. And he was a great guest to have on, and really enjoy his company as well. And he does such a fine job at R Wine Bar. And then to that local author, Kale Lawrence. It was a pleasure getting to know her a little bit more. I'd been out to her book signing a while back, got a little bit familiar with her, started reading the book. I've had a little bit more time, and I'm progressing on that, so really, really enjoying that. Coming up next week on the show, musical artist Denim. We'll talk about everything that he's involved in, and then a big event coming up in the Sioux Empire, SuperCon. Shane Gerlach will be on to tell us all that that event will have going on coming up the 1st of October. And that next week will be episode number 99. Then after that, what special stuff will we have on 100? Okay, as to what's special for me going on this weekend, Friday night is typically Haig Brothers at R Wine Bar. We're going to that because it's really going to be more like Spoon Cat and, ran into Jeremy Haig the other night, and he already told me, it's okay if you sit in the back because you'll be able to hear us that night. And then Saturday, a couple of things. Reminder, Artist Think Tank at Van Arts Studio, 6 p.m. over there on North Phillips, kind of catty corner from Wood Grain Brewery at 9th and Phillips there. So you can take that in if you'd like. Just a reminder, take your own beverage and also a chair, unless you want to stand for an hour, but it's going to be held to an hour. They just want to get some brainstorming going and so forth. And then Saturday night after that, heading down to the sky. No, not hosting trivia this time. Mm-mm. But Crazy Frank, that I speak of quite often for Crazy Frank Karaoke, his Sky Lounge debut. So we're going to go down and have some fun for that. Hopefully you have fun, but make sure you stay safe as well. Thanks again. Appreciate you listening. Remember, my name is Dave Holly, and for me, every day is a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by the Sky Lounge and Tea, XL Chiropractic, Quality Nails, Ale Hop Brewery Tours, and Jesse Moffitt Entertainment. If you would like to contribute to the continued success of this podcast, go to DaveHollyHour.com. At the bottom of the front page is the additional links section. Click on the orange button, Dave Holly on Linktree. You can order merchandise, become a Dave Holly Hour VIP, and make contributions to the show. The Dave Holly Hour is produced in the Dipsy Doodle Studios by Big D Entertainment.
Thanks for listening.